Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Fast Money starts right now. I'm Melissa Lee. Tonight's trader lineup, Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Brian Kelly, and Bono and Eisen. Tonight on Fast, Intel plunging after its latest earnings report. We'll break down all the numbers and find out what is next for the semiconductor giant. Plus, if you're looking for safety amid today's sell-off, is gold still your best option? We'll take a look at the outlook for the precious metal. And there were a couple bright spots in this Thursday sell-off. We'll find out what sent this name flying higher. We start off with a major reversal in the markets today, led by big tech, the Dow dropping more than 1%, with Apple contributing more than 100 points to this loss. And take a look at some of the other stocks that saw some real swings today. NVIDIA was up more than 1% at highs, but closed down nearly 3%. AMD, Facebook, Alphabet, same camp. And then, of course, there was Tesla. After its blowout earnings report, shares were up as much as 6%, but ended the day down by 5%. Tim, this seems like the momentum trade, the big cap tech trade, that sort of got unwound a little bit today.
Yeah, you know, is this another one of those rotation moments? We had one in mid-May, we had one in mid-June, and you know, maybe we have one here in late July. But if you think about the move in big cap tech, so Apple's down about 5.5% against the S&P since in the last 10 days. And if you look across the board, you've seen this essentially across the tech space. And in fact, if you look at small cap stocks, so the IWM, the ETF that tracks the Russell 2000, actually eked out a small gain today. That's up almost 3% during that last 10 days. Look at banks. Banks, which have been really easy to pick on. Yield curve making new lows, or at least the 10-year and the long end continuing to flatten out. And yet banks are up 4.5% in the last 10 days. So this isn't just a one-day move. And sometimes these days seem like, boy, this just all started today. This is a move that's been building for the last at least two weeks of sessions. And I think it's something that could continue. And again, we've just gotten through earnings from a lot of these folks, and we started to see what it looks like when you start to sell the news. So very, very undersold in terms of value versus growth. We've talked about it ad nauseum, and it does matter.
And the earnings are giving investors a reason to take a look at these stocks in the context of their valuation. Microsoft, for instance, Brian Kelly, there are a couple things that, you know, normally investors, analysts might overlook. In terms of operating margins coming in a little bit light, Azure coming in a little, growth coming in a little bit light. But in the context of its valuation, was that an excuse to lighten up on a name that on a price-to-sales basis is close to five-year highs?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the action today, particularly some strength in other sectors, augurs for this kind of, okay, let's take a pause here. That being said, you know, I'm a bit cautious and a little concerned for two different reasons. Number one is, you mentioned Microsoft, but Tesla, you know, they had some great earnings and it reversed and went lower. You know, Apple, not looking that great. These are kind of the names that everybody's been involved in, the Robinhood traders, Davy Day Trader, whoever you want to know, whatever you want to say, the momentum names really reversed today. So that concerns me, number one. And then number two, as Tim mentioned, the yield curve continues to get flat, and that eventually is going to start, I think, to hurt stocks. So you have to think, okay, what does the economy look like? And we're going back to your Microsoft question, is this as good as it gets for Microsoft? Will the economy pick up and will they be able to kind of grow their way out of these little hiccups that they've had? And I think the answer today that the market gave you was no.
Yeah, and we did see that bid to bonds in today's session. TLT was up by more than 1%. Karen, speaking to BK's point about the 10-year yield moving to, I think it was 0.57% at one point in the session.
I mean, there's a lot of sort of conflicting things out there to the extent that if things are getting better in terms of can the country reopen, then you saw some of those trades today, right? You saw banks and you saw airlines and that rotation toward value, towards industrials, that's been really, really beaten down a lot. And then, you know, when you look at, maybe it's just the end of momentum and I think we give too much credit when we think about, oh, should Microsoft be down a little more than this, a little less. It's really just the momentum going in and people deciding, all right, you know what? So did they ring the bell last night at Tesla at 4:30 in the afternoon when it traded, I think, close to 1,700? And then just, you know, you hear everybody trample toward the door. I think that phenomenon is probably more than a one-day phenomenon. And look, I'm long, you know, Google, I'm long Facebook, I'm long Apple, I'm long Microsoft. I'm not inclined to get out and hope I can figure out when to get back in, when these companies again will be in favor. I think they're still in favor, but, you know, this 1 or 2 day reversal or 1 or 2 week reversal should be expected when you have valuations move as quickly and as far as these have.
Yeah, and you're starting to get street analysts question the valuation. Bono, and I know you saw this call out on Apple from Goldman Sachs, basically saying that the stock price is unsustainable here. They're questioning the launch of the 5G phone, saying that it could be delayed by a month or so. And so they're really throwing into question sort of this run that we've seen straight off of the March bottom to where we are right now. The stock finished down by more than 4% today's session. What do you think happened in today's trade? And do you think it lasts for more than today?
You know, that's a great question. I tend to agree in large part with what Karen said. This is really a momentum play. If we look back to, you know, a lot of the comments that were made about this move higher in large cap tech, this was never really a valuation play. At least that wasn't the argument for these things going higher. It was, again, a flight to quality when we had a lot of unknowns going on in the economy, fiscal policy, et cetera, et cetera. So really what it was a flight to what is perceived value. And we are seeing rotations into energy, industrials, rails, and some of the other names. What gives me pause is when I start to see rotation into names like some of the airlines, which the credit market is clearly telling you there's still some hiccups down the road. I think you're still paying points up front for CDS on a couple of those names. That doesn't tell me, that doesn't bode well for the stocks going forward. The last thing I'll point out is that you've seen just quite a bit of increased volatility around all of these names. I think Amazon was up 7%, down 7% in the last 3 days. If you look over a longer period of time, a lot of these names are trading relatively flat, maybe down 2, 3%. And in large part, tech earnings are relatively strong. I think, again, it's about momentum and expectations. And I think expectations got a little bit high, and people are taking this opportunity to kind of rotate into other sectors. But I would guard against being too speculative in what I deployed the new capital into.
All right. We're watching Disney shares move lower in the after-hour session. They're down by just about 1%. We got a news alert here. Julia Borson's got the news. Julia.
Melissa, Disney just now announcing delays to its film schedule in light of ongoing theater closures as well as production shutdowns. The studio announcing that Mulan, which was dated for August 21st, it had already been delayed multiple times, is now unset, saying they're, quote, pausing their release plans as they assess how they can most effectively bring this film to audiences around the world. The company also announcing that they are currently, that the all currently scheduled Avatar and Star Wars films have been moved out by 1 year, and other films set for release later this year have been pushed back as well, including a Searchlight film, The Personal History of David Copperfield, pushing that back by 2 weeks to August 28th. And then the Ridley Scott drama, The Last Duel, it was set for Christmas Day of this year, is now being delayed to October of 2021. You see, Disney shares are trading down about 1% in after-hours trading as this year increasingly looks like it could be a wash for movie studios. Melissa, we still don't know when theaters will really fully be open again here in the U.S.
Yep. Julia, thank you. Julia Borson. I think Mulan was no surprise given the release date was in August, but for them to simply move out the full slate of movies, including Star Wars, which also has ramifications for all the products tied to Star Wars, like all the toys and things that are sold by other companies, Tim. You know, we're really seeing the stock take a bit of a hit in the after-hour session.
Yeah, not a dry eye in the house over the delay of David Copperfield. I mean, so
I know you're looking forward to that greatly.
I'm personally crushed. So Disney, you know, we continue to talk about theme parks, but we, you know, the studios have been the gift that keep on giving. And the delay here in the release is some of this is logistics. Some of this is trying to target the best audience. It'd be very interesting to see how they want to use Disney Plus, and they're north of 50 million Disney Plus subscribers now. to be releasing some of these? You know, will this change a release approach that maybe ultimately is how they totally control their distribution, which you know they largely do right now. But none of this is a major surprise. This isn't a major move. I think Disney's issues are really tied to the reopening of the economy, and there is some level of reliance upon the infrastructure in whether it's movie theaters or theme parks. I don't think this changes your approach on Disney at all. And I think what it does is it underscores just how powerful, though, the studios are and where that's something that I think ultimately will come right back for them and there will be pent-up demand.
I guess we knew that it was taking a hit from all sides going into today, right? I mean, we knew that sports wouldn't be back for a very long time, hitting the broadcast business, the ESPN cable business specifically. We knew that studios were going to be challenged. We knew that the theme parks were going to have hiccups in the reopenings, especially when you take a look at Hong Kong Disney having to close once again, Karen. But still, how does this make you feel about the stock at this point?
Well, I'm wondering also, does this delay in production, not just from the movie theater revenue, but also from wasn't this going to then be new supply for Disney Plus that gets pushed back however long? So I don't know if that, you know, that was the sort of the bright spot, even though it wasn't in terms of money making the bright spot because they're still spending so much to build it. But it's just sort of just another, I mean, God, I just, they're sort of in the center, the worst of it all. That's almost so appealing to me that everything's terrible that I got to look at it again, except for that they do have a lot of debt from that Fox acquisition. And so I think you can wait a while.
All right. The stock is down 1.5% right now. We've got an earnings alert for you meantime on Intel. Shares are tanking after the chip name reported results. They're down about 9% right now off of the after-hour session lows. Deirdre Bose has got the details. Hi, Deirdre.
Hey, Melissa, that's right. There's a few reasons for the drop that we are seeing. One is a more near-term concern. Gross margins fell to 55% versus 62% in the year-ago quarter. The bigger reason, though, that could affect Intel's longer-term position in the semi landscape, the company saying that its new 7-nanometer chip technology is 6 months behind schedule. AMD notably moving higher on this news. The rival chipmaker launched its own 7-nanometer chips in early 2019 and claimed that they could deliver better performance than the Intel alternative. Now Intel's delay could allow AMD to take even more market share. Now, one of the key questions for investors going into this report was, can Intel hold off rivals and upgrade its manufacturing processes? Certainly going to be a question on the analyst call that's just getting underway. Bob Swan, CEO, is speaking. Remember, though, that Intel has seen other setbacks and delays over the last few years that have allowed competitors like AMD to take market share. Now, Intel did reinstate full-year guidance. However, it implied a disappointing second half of the year. Both Q3 and Q4 EPS appear that they will be below estimates. Shares, as Melissa mentioned, they are down some 9% in the after hours. Remember, too, that Intel has been battling NVIDIA for title of largest U.S. chip maker. If these losses for Intel persist till tomorrow's opening, NVIDIA once again overtakes the company in market cap as the most valuable semi. Back over to you.
Deirdre, thank you. Deirdre Bosa, Bonoin, this is an Intel-specific problem, it seems, taking a look at the after-hours action that Deirdre had pointed out. And we knew that there were some questions about Intel's competitiveness. I mean, Apple moving to its own chip sort of underscored that notion going into this report already. But with the delay of the 7-nanometer, you know, there are some real questions here about the future.
Absolutely. I mean, I think when you think about technology stocks, really what you're going to point to is the gross margins there, right? For the most part, a lot of these businesses are relatively capital light, so you expect there to be a bit more robust from a margin perspective. With that said, Intel has had several challenges. You know, I noticed AMD was also up. I mean, the short story of it is that I'm hesitant to put too much credence into what's going on in the short term. Clearly, the Apple news was not necessarily positive, but as Guy pointed out in a previous session, essentially, that might actually expand their pricing power and revert some of the margin compression that we've seen. I mean, the earnings just came out. I'd really like to dive in a bit more before I can give you a bit more meaty answer there. But upon first glance, you know, I really tend to think that this might be a more of a short-term shock than a long-term trend.
Speakers?
Oh, you're looking for me. Yeah,
that's your name, Beakers,
so
right?
So I would say that is my name. Yeah, I mean, Sometimes. Took me a second. Here's what I'd say about it. I don't think you can extrapolate what's going on with Intel to the rest of the market. So that's number one. Number two, in this environment, having margin compression is not going to be good for your stock price. That's what everybody's looking for, is these kind of high margin, high growth stocks. If that's coming down and that's going to take a couple quarters, as their guidance appears to be indicating, that again is not going to be good for your stock price. So for me, if I'm in Intel, I'm probably starting to get out of it, take some profit. You might want to look at AMD, but I think with Intel, the trade for now is done.
All right, let's get to the other big story weighing on the markets here. The next virus relief package, for all the latest details, let's get to Elon Moy. Elon.
Well, Melissa, early next week, that is when we now expect to see Senate Republicans introduce their next coronavirus relief package. We had thought that was going to happen today, but Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said that the White House wanted more time to look over the details of the aid. Still, he said the administration and Republicans have reached an agreement in principle.
Although the early days of our economic recovery have beaten expectations and surprised the experts, we have really only begun to repair the damage. More than 17 million Americans are still jobless. Far too many families are still hurting. This is not over.
Here's what we know is in the package so far. There's another round of PPP for businesses that have suffered a revenue loss of at least 50%. There's $105 billion in aid for education, flexibility for states to use federal aid to offset revenue losses, $16 billion in new funding for testing, and some version of those enhanced unemployment benefits. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin talking about a 70% wage replacement there. Guys, as we know, that $600 boost to unemployment, that expires at the end of next week. And right now, the timeline for Congress to get something done before then is looking really tight. Back over to you.
And of course, Elon, we're just simply talking about the package that the GOP is going to put together, to put forth. They finally agreed on that. There's still the whole other process of negotiating with the Democrats. I mean, the chasm between what the Democrats want and even this proposed package is vast.
That's right. Democrats had said they would not start negotiations until Republicans had put forth their own proposal. I think it's quite telling that literally within just a few minutes of McConnell saying they're going to unveil this next week, Pelosi announced that she's going to be having a press conference tomorrow to push to preserve that $600 in unemployment benefits. So you can already see where some of the battle lines are being drawn.
Yeah. Elon, thank you. Elon Moy. And of course, on Squawk Box this morning, we spoke to Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. He said explicitly that the enhanced unemployment benefit as it stands now will not exist. So that implies that there is going to be some real headbutting when it comes to that specific point. Tim, it had been long assumed in the markets that there would be a bill passed and that there would be no gap. What do you think now?
Well, I think the markets have certainly priced in an expectation that there has to be an extension of unemployment. There has to be an extension there have to be delivery of some type of new stimulus checks. So, yes, I think this, you know, delays will hurt. But I still think that the biggest issue for the market is not around stimulus. I think it's around the Federal Reserve. And as much as stimulus checks have been very good, and we've actually seen the straight line through to some big box retailers like Best Buy, I'm not sure that the market is as offsides on this as this presumption might be. I think ultimately there is going to be a very bipartisan follow through, and something that ultimately is the market is maybe priced in some good news, but I think it's all about the Federal Reserve right now.
Brian Kelly?
Beakers, that's me. Yeah, I remembered it this time. So, listen, I actually think there's a non-trivial chance here, and probably maybe let's call it a 40% chance, that this does not get done in time. And if you think about it, well, there's not a lot of incentive for the Democrats to negotiate, right? It's the Republicans and the president, all they are, their biggest metric is the stock market. So if you're a Democrat and you want to kind of hurt the reelection chances, you want the stock market to go lower. So there's no incentive for you to negotiate. as well, Congress has always shown us that deadlines don't necessarily mean anything to them. Remember during TARP, they didn't pass it. Multiple times they missed that, and the market misprices that. So I actually think we're pretty vulnerable based on this news that we're just at the GOP level and we've got to the end of next week. I think the market's more vulnerable than people are giving it credit for.
All right, let's get more on today's sell-off now. Bring in Tom Lee, the head of research for Fundstrat Global Advisors. Tom, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
In terms of the sell-off today, you think that this is sort of a reversal of the momentum trade?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty healthy profit-taking. You know, stocks can't go up forever. We've had already a great July, so I think it's nice to see stocks pull back, and I think it's good to see rotation in leadership. So, you know, to me, it's painful, but I think it's really healthy.
I was sort of taking a peek at the conversation you and Rob Slimer, your technical analyst, were having. I think it was on Twitter. And one thing that I thought was interesting that Rob had pointed out was that gold was higher today, but we did see miners, and in particular the junior miners, reverse, really indicating that this is an unwind of some of that momentum. How long do you think a move like this lasts?
You know, in 2020, growth has led, and there have only been really short periods of value leadership. I don't think that value sort of sustainable leadership takes place until we really break the path of the virus. So I think right now, unfortunately, the virus is spreading at an uncontained rate. Until we can conclude, at least the market can conclude that that's peaked, you know, I think growth is fine. And I do think people are making too much of this sort of top five stocks are too much of the S&P market cap. You know, they're 22% of the market cap, but they're close to 20% of earnings. So they're not disproportionately representing earnings share.
Brian, you got a question?
I do. Hey, Tom, it's BK. So, you know, you made a tremendous call when the market was down, and you tend to be a bit of a contrarian. So I'm surprised up at these levels that you aren't a little more cautious. Coming into the election, with potential for a, I wouldn't even call it a second wave, this tsunami wave coming into the fall, what gets you concerned? None of that concerns you at all?
I mean, Brian, there's a lot to be worried about. I mean, the economy's still stuck in neutral. The virus is still growing at an uncontained rate. But on the other hand, when I look at positioning, nearly the majority, I wouldn't say nearly every, but the majority of our clients that I have a conversation with are really cautious for the reasons you've mentioned and for the obvious reasons, like earnings are terrible. There's so much cash on the sidelines, but when you've got negative sentiment, retail sentiment negative, nearly $5 trillion of cash, and then a VIX that's about to break down, I think this sounds like the next, you know, 100 points, next 7% is higher, not lower. And I think that's contrarian because I think people think we're topping right now.
Tom, we're going to leave it there. Great to speak with you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Tom Lee of Fundstrat. Karen, you know, Tom just hit on a bunch of points, points that you make when you explain why you stay in some of these big cap tech stocks.
Right. So I stay in them for because I still like them, even though their valuation is a little stretched. But then I also have names that are, you know, more so for the banks, for example, right? If things get better in the country in terms of reopening and the economy feels like it's maybe getting some of a floor under it, then I think those will do better. I'm always nervous. Whatever Tom says, he makes these bold predictions, and I always think, wow, that's crazy. And he's been right so many times. It doesn't feel to me like, you know, like the market's about poised for another big breakout, but he's been right so many times. I got to think, wow, maybe there is just so much money on the sidelines and we don't even need further Fed stimulus. It's just too many people think the market's topping out.
And he makes these bold predictions monotone. So it's like you don't even realize that they're bold until after you sit there and you think about it, Bono. And what did you think? I mean, basically you're saying the pain trade is going to be higher at this point.
Sorry, Bueller. you know, it does make a lot of sense. He makes some great points. Listen, there is $5 trillion on the sidelines. And then on top of that, we have Fed stimulus that's continuing to be more speculative in nature. So, I mean, it's a logical argument, right? Like, if I go to pick it apart from from both a technical and logical standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. Again, we can make the valuation argument as a contrarian to what he said. But again, I really don't think this rally, I mean, the last leg of this rally has really been leaning on valuation. It's growth, it's Ford, Ford earnings out to 21, 22. And as we said, it's really a Fed put. There's a Fed put in the market and there's no denying that. And I think trying to overthink that point, for one, hurts my head. And I think we overcomplicate the equation here.
All right, coming up, despite the sea of red on the street, we found a few bright spots in today's market. What are these names and should you buy them? We'll debate that ahead. And later, is Amex about to pay a big price when it reports earnings tomorrow? We'll find out what some option traders are saying about this financial stock. Much more when Fast Money returns.
One in eight. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Who'll serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to McDonald's.
One in eight start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
Welcome back to Fast Money. There were a few bright spots in today's big sell-off. Check out shares of Texas Capital Bank surging more than 9% after posting better than expected results. The move also giving a boost to the KRE Regional Bank's ETF closing up more than 2.5% today. Meantime, take a look at airlines. They also took flight. Shares of American United Airlines leading the sector higher by around 4%. American saying it posted a $2 billion loss in the latest quarter but slowed its cash burn rate dramatically. And that really is the story of the airlines, Tim. They need to slow that down. They need to have liquidity. For American, at least, it was $15.5 billion in liquidity on the balance sheet at the end of the quarter.
Yeah, I think for airlines, as much as it's a painful story and it's about, you know, less cash burn on a daily basis, and that's the good news. That's certainly the glass half full on the very half empty story. Someone like United, who just gave us numbers and said that they're now down to $25 million a day on cash burn, the story really is trying to match up demand to capacity. And I actually applaud the airlines for not trying to chase either some additional demand by massively lowering prices. I mean, I think this is a process. I think the reality is that airlines are not going to be normalized until for at least the next year, possibly year and a half. But the liquidity dynamics, and again, I would be quoting our friend Hunter Kay at Wolf, who says somewhere by the end of Q1 2021, maybe into Q2, if they get to 50% of capacity, they're more or less at break even, especially after having reeled in. So that's really the trade with airlines. The fact that they bounced a bit today, not a big surprise. Getting more insight into that cash burn, I don't think there's any question they're solvent. It's a question of when and what you want to pay for an airline right here.
Yeah, they got the cash burn down to $18 million a day. But they have a lot of debt, Karen, and they also announced that they're doing another debt offering of more than $1 billion. And this time they're collateralizing gates as well as some branding, I think, intellectual property. How do these American Airlines specifically has much more debt than a lot of its competitors. It started the year with more than $33 billion in debt, which is basically, I mean, that's like, I don't know how many airplanes that's worth, but how do they start paying down that massive pile of debt once even when the business returns?
Well, I mean, they do get some cash from all of these refinancings and new borrowings that they've been doing. So that's going to help for a while, but that is really the story. I mean, these balance sheets, which were in really good shape coming in, have just exploded, and I think that they're going to be digging out of these these new capital structures for years. So I always look to the debt. It's trading better than it was for sure, but it is not consistent with where some of these equity valuations are for the stocks. So I get the idea of being able to get to 50%, and then if they're at a break-even business, I don't know what's that worth for the equity. I don't know. To me, I'm still, because the balance sheets have just gotten so underwater relative to where they were so little time ago, I just think they're a no touch.
BK, you agree? No touch?
I've been completely wrong on the airline. So for me, yeah, they've got to be a no touch because at this point, I've got no touch in these things whatsoever. I have thought that their balance sheets are going to be challenged for a long time. I didn't think people would be willing to fly as much as they are, so I've been wrong on that. But I don't like buying companies that the best thing that they can do is break even, and at the same time, they're collateralizing the curtains and the intellectual property. It's just not a trade for me. So, yeah, they are a no-touch.
Yeah. Bono, and you were taking a look at the debt that you mentioned before. So what do you think of the airlines here?
It's no secret my opinion on the airlines. I don't think no touch even begins to describe my sentiments about the space. And it's about the airlines themselves and about the opportunity cost of not investing in something else that has a much more robust upside profile. But speaking about the debt, I will be constructive here and I will point out and give an applause to the structuring team there. Half of that debt is actually... they can convert that to payment in kind or picking it, which means that they can actually exchange debt for debt, tack that on to the end of the life cycle of the maturity, and actually give themselves a little bit more cash runway. So I did want to point that out. Seems pretty pretty creative in terms of, again, the name of the story, the name of the game here is cash burn maintenance, and that gives them another lever to pull to that end.
Yeah, this is the ultimate sort of vaccine play. Tim, I'm going to give you a brutal would you rather, though, because airlines and cruise lines are among retail investors' favorites. And, you know, we like to listen to what our viewers are trading. So would you rather airlines or cruise lines?
I mean, what I will not is would you rather and throw in, you know,
anything else?
anything else. Airlines. Airlines, for sure. I think you have a case here where we at least have a little bit more insight. People don't have to get back on cruise lines. They have to get back on airlines.
All right. We got some breaking news out of Washington. Let's get back to Elon Moy. Elon.
Melissa, President Trump announcing that he is canceling the Republican convention in Jacksonville, Florida, saying the timing of this event is just not right. Now, they had already decided to hold much of the event, if not all of it, outdoors in order to address the surging cases of coronavirus that the state is seeing. President Trump said that it will continue in some other form. But for now, the Republican convention in Jacksonville is off. Back over to you.
All right, Elon, thank you. Elon Moy in Washington. Coming up, we are celebrating Christmas in July here on Fast Money as we break down the recent moves in silver and gold. Those trades next. And our own BK has brought along a chart of the day. He says you better watch out with what is happening here as gold prices rip higher. You don't want to miss this. We're back in two.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. There's been some magic in the metals lately. Gold and silver both having some impressive runs since their March lows. Gold climbing over 23%, while silver has exploded a whopping 82%. So do metals keep grinding higher here? Tim, you've been a fan.
Yeah, I think they do. Certainly Burl Ives sang it very well on Rudolph. And I think you have a case here where silver, which is in the last 91 days has outperformed gold by about 48%. I think there's more of that to go. I think if you look at that gold-silver ratio, how oversold it was to the downside, there's still a long way to get back to the means. I think inflation adjusted, if you take gold back to where it peaked in the early 80s, 2600 is the level on gold. I think you can go there. I actually think gold, which at times gets very, very frothy right now, has every reason to break through those September 2011 levels, which would be all-time highs around 1926, something like that.
Yeah. Bonwin, how do you feel about gold, investing in gold over miners? I mean, we did see that the breakdown in the correlation, at least in today.
I'm still pretty bulled up. I mean, if you look at all the fiscal stimulus, I mean, it's really a question of how the Fed is really going to manage a balance sheet going forward. I mean, I think we've all said it in many different ways, but when you have that uncertainty, rates where they are, and the uncertainty of the economy and what what fruit this fiscal stimulus is going to bear on the back end, yes, it seems like a very logical place to put the money.
All right, perfect segue for our chart of the day. BK has brought this chart of the day to our attention. So, Beeks, why did you point this out?
Well, I pointed this out because there's some just basic fundamentals. This is the drumbeat behind why you want to be in something like gold and silver. So this is real interest rates. And what that is the interest rate in this particular case on the five-year bond minus inflation. So in this case right now, if you're to buy a five-year bond, in 5 years, you'd be guaranteed to lose 1.13% when you adjust for inflation. So in that environment, you don't want to be in bonds. So all that bond money is coming in to gold and silver. And if you look at it, as soon as the real rate dropped below zero, gold started to take off. And I think that continues. You know, the one caveat I would say, and this just happened as we were on air here, is the CMA has raised some margin on silver. And so what that effectively does is people have to readjust some things, maybe cut some positions. So in the short term, I'm talking next week, you might see some weakness in this, but there's a huge tailwind with these negative real rates for both gold and silver.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the two-day move in silver that we saw, not including today's session, but the prior two sessions, was the biggest two-day gain in the history of the data, according to Carter Worth. So maybe no surprise that CME is stepping in there and putting these limits on. Karen, we were actually discussing real rates just today over the phone, just, you know, us girls chatting real rates.
Yes, as you do.
Yeah. As we do, yeah.
Truly, we were. That's embarrassing. Yes, it is true. No,
that's hot.
I find that sort of fascinating. I get, you know, I come back to the question again. So gold in a negative rate environment and an inflationary environment, which we could maybe be at simultaneously, or low rates and inflation. But I'm surprised, BK, you didn't say Bitcoin.
Oh, wow. I mean, come on. I mentioned Bitcoin the other night, and there's only so much the American public can take. But Bitcoin's actually underperformed, and actually at this point in time, it's mispriced. The amount of growth in addresses is totally mispriced in Bitcoin. So I think there's more upside in that than I do in gold and silver.
All right, coming up, check out these earnings movers and shakers. We'll bring you the latest on what is happening in these names and how to trade them, Pulte and Twitter. And later, option traders say this financial is ready to flatline. That trade and more straight ahead. Welcome back to Fast Money. It is the heat of earnings season, and Twitter is one of the few stocks soaring higher today. Let's get to Julia Borson on what investors got excited about in Twitter's quarter. Julia.
Well, Melissa, Twitter shares adding 4% today on the company's fastest growth in daily monetizable users since it started reporting that metric. That key user number rising by 20 million between the first quarter and the second quarter, soaring way past expectations of the addition of 7 million users. But despite that user growth, revenue fell faster than expected, declining 19% from the year earlier quarter, suffering from a broad pullback in advertising and the fact that Twitter is very much reliant on brand advertising, which has declined more than direct response ads. Still, the company says it's building out its ad tools, including a new ad server and direct response ads, so it can better monetize those new users when the ad market eventually returns. And Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey is saying the company is working to build out other new revenue streams, including potentially a subscription service, saying they've hired people to start working on this option.
We have a really high bar for when we would ask consumers to pay for aspects of Twitter. You know, this is a start, and we're in the very, very early phases of exploring.
As for last week's hack into those high-profile Twitter users' accounts, Dorsey apologized, saying they fell behind on restrictions on internal tools related to that hack and that they are continuing to invest in security. Melissa?
Julia, thank you. Julia Boorstin. Bonawin, did you like Twitter's quarter? Do you like Twitter?
I like the monetizable subscriber growth. The short answer is yes, but as I kind of comb through the earnings release, it's really not about profitability. It's about their ability to engage and grow revenues from users over the long term. I do feel like it's a little bent towards the continued work from home, being that people have more time to be engaged at a much higher level. But over the long run, I do see a shift there, and I think it was overall pretty positive and constructive. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think for a lot of these sort of social media companies, anybody who's benefiting from work from home, there's this real underlying question of how much is pulled forward and how many of those new users actually stick around once work from home is diminished to some degree. Brian Kelly, I don't think I've called you Brian in like years, but Brian, how do you feel about Twitter?
I don't know who that is. Yeah. I was wondering who that was. Boy, yeah. I actually like Twitter. I think this quarter was good. The monetizable users is huge. That's always been the knock here is that it's a great platform. It's probably the biggest newsroom in the world. It's where I get most of my news first, not always necessarily journalistically vetted, but at least it's where I go first to find out what's moving things. And so I actually like that they're able to make some money here.
All right, coming up, Twitter is not the only stock rallying on earnings. Can you imagine? Pulte Group also climbing higher after reporting this morning. We'll break down what is behind this move. Plus, there is one name in the payment space that is gearing up for earnings, but options traders say that its run may be overdrawn. We'll explain when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Pulte Group rallying higher after reporting earnings this morning. Diana Olick joins us now to break down what is behind this move. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Melissa. Yeah, Pulte beat expectations and offered a pretty optimistic outlook for the housing market in the second half of this year. So after plummeting 53% annually in April, new orders at Pulte jumped 50% in June, showing that incredible V-shaped recovery the builders have been seeing. Buyers are looking for larger floor plans with multiple rooms for working and schooling from home, and they want high tech, which is, of course, the builder's sweet spot. Now, Pulte reported strong demand across all geographies and a 77% jump in June orders from first-time home buyers, as well as a 21% annual gain for active adult, which had been lagging. Pulte CEO Ryan Marshall said on the earnings call, "We are very encouraged by the fact that the momentum of this dramatic recovery continues as demand has remained strong through the first few weeks of July. That strong demand allowed Pulte to raise its prices in more than half of its communities, anywhere from 1 to 3%. Also, its cancellation rate is coming down." Now, Ryan added that Pulte is fully up and operational again with showrooms open. They are also buying land again, which most builders had stopped doing in March when the pandemic hit. Also, he mentioned a zip code analysis they did on buying patterns that showed a movement of renters and homeowners from urban centers heading to surrounding suburbs. We've heard that before. Now, the strong results were enough for Pulte to reinstitute guidance for the rest of the year. Melissa?
All right, Diana. Thank you, Diana Olick. Despite Pulte's beat, both the Home Builders ETF, XHB, and Home Construction ETF, ITB, closed in the red after spending the day mostly higher. Karen, it looks like we have the data now to show that there is an urban flight out of the cities. Does that make the home builder story even stronger?
It does. I mean, I think we're in the early-ish stages of that flight. I mean, the home builder, and going into this downturn, they were in a pretty good position in that there wasn't a flood of inventory at all. And so they're still not. And so obviously then when you get more demand and you don't have a greater increase in supply, you have a pretty good market. But we're seeing it over and over, the same trade. If we look at something like a Whirlpool and how strong their earnings were, even Best Buy talking about their appliance strength. So, I mean, there are people who are still employed, not as many, of course, and then you have interest rates at this level that we haven't seen maybe forever for some mortgages. that's a pretty good mix, and we don't have oversupply. So I like the home builder space, and I think we're going to continue to see strength there. We've seen it in Home Depot. We've seen it in Lowe's.
Yeah.
The whole flywheel.
Tim, do you like home builders, or would you go down the food chain a little bit, so to speak, and go to, say, the Whirlpools of the world the flooring people or, you know, Sherwin-Williams?
Yeah, well, I like Whirlpool. I like Masco. In fact, I've been having trouble. I finally waved in a Whirlpool refrigerator after about a 6-week wait. So there's a lot of pent-up demand. There's a lot of supply chain issues, frankly. What is the active adult segment of Pulte's bit? What does that mean? Am I an active adult? I don't really.
I think you're active. Active in what
yes,
way is
Thank
the
you.
Question? But
I don't know. But I will say this about Pulte. Going into COVID-19, this stock was on a tear. So when you consider that second quarter order growth, and when you look at the gross margin and everything you just talked about with these secular trends, I think this is a stock you stay with. I think Pulte is the one that continues to run.
All right, coming up, we'll break down why options traders are saying it is time to cash in on one payment name. That's next. And catch Jim Cramer's interviews with the CEOs of Lemonade and MP Materials tonight on Mad Money. That is 6 p.m. Eastern time. MP Materials, by the way, operates Mountain Pass, the rare earths mine. You won't want to miss that. Fast Money continues right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out American Express lagging the rest of the payment stocks in a big way this year. The name reports earnings before the bell tomorrow, and option traders are betting it could be about to pay the price when those results cross the wire. Bonawin got the action. What are you watching, Bonawin?
Indeed. So taking a look at AXP going into earnings, you can take a look at the money straddle, and that's implying about a 3.5% move in either direction between now and Friday. Compare that to an average of about 2% over the last four quarters. And the trade that really stuck out to me was the Friday expiry, so July 24th, 90 strike puts. That traded about 2,000 times for an average price of around 20 cents. So the buyer of this structure is betting that the stock's going to roll over about 7%. The seller of this put is essentially betting that the stock is going to stay range-bound to the downside. I will add that the 91 and the 92 puts also seem bought. And given the short-dated nature of the trade, it makes for a pretty good trading position as opposed to investing position. If you get a lot of volatility to the downside, it's an opportunity for you to hold these and then close them out for a profit.
All right. Thanks for that, Bonawin. For more options action, you can tune into the full show. That is tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Coming up, we've got the final trade. Take a check on shares of Intel in the after-hours trade. Still down to the tune of 10% right now. Of course, a better-than-expected quarter on the top and bottom line for the second quarter, but gross margins had come in a little bit late. The company also indicating that it is delaying its 7-nanometer chip production line. We are watching shares of AMD move higher on the back of that news. So this is something to watch in tomorrow's session. All right, time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Karen.
Yeah, well, we were just talking about it. Pulte Homes, that they were very optimistic on the conference call when it did open and trade much higher, and it ended the day near its lows, but I really like it here.
Bono and Eisen.
I am holding on to my golden ticket with GLD.
Brian Kelly.
That's me. So, you know, one of my favorite signals to take profits is good news, bad price action. Tesla had that today. You sell Tesla.
Interesting. Tim Seymour.
Mm-hmm. Mel, you're on Twitter, right?
Am I on Twitter? At this moment, you
mean?
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. No. Well, not during the show, because that's, you know, how you're conducting such great interviews. But look, the bottom line is the engagement on Twitter right now, I don't know why people are poo-pooing 20 million sequential daily active users. Twitter, stay there, buy it.
All right, thanks for watching Fast. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 5. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.